Well, Indonesia specialist at the Australian National University, Associate Professor Greg Feely, has been following developments in Surabaya, and he joined me earlier in our Canberra studio. Professor Feely, thanks for joining the world today.
It's a pleasure.
Now, you're among those warning that the routing of Islamic State in Syria could see an upsurge in violence in the home countries of sympathisers returning from Syria. Is this what we've seen with these Surabaya bombings?
We're really waiting on further information from the police about this. We're waiting to see what they've found in the house of the family that conducted the bombings. But if it's true that the father, Dita, had received bomb-making training and then returned to Indonesia, it looks very much like he may well have been in a position to have been responding directly to ISIS instructions from Syria. So it also needs to be put in the context, I think, Eleanor, of a spike in jihadist activity, not just in the last week. It's been particularly intense in the last week, but also going back a number of weeks. Really, the ideological father, as it were, of pro-ISIS groups in Indonesia. His name is Aman Abdurrahman. He's been before a court on trial for his role in the previous pro-IS attack, which took place in Jakarta in early 2016. So that's already raised the temperature in jihadist circles. Then we had this siege and hostage situation at the detention centre, the police detention centre in South Jakarta for the detainees who are awaiting trial on terrorism charges, and that led to the deaths of six police. So there has been this intensification. It could be that this is largely being driven by developments within Indonesia, but it's also, if we take the police at their word, that this is something that could well be directed internationally. We just need more information to be certain of that.
And do you know how many IS supporters have now returned to Indonesia from Syria?
Police have been giving out several figures in the last few days. They're saying roughly 1,100 Indonesians have gone to Syria and Iraq, most of them to fight with ISIS, but not all of them. They say about 100 have died in battle. There are about 500 that have been deported or have returned, and there are probably around about 500 Indonesians still in Syria and Iraq. The returnees, I've seen other figures that suggest that we're talking several dozen serious returnees. These are people not deported because they've been captured by, for example, the Turkish government, but rather returning of their own volition. A number of those people would appear to present quite serious security risks. Some of the people also are giving the impression that they were thoroughly disillusioned with what they experienced in Syria and Iraq. So there's a mixture. There's a difficulty for the Indonesian police here in that there are no laws that enable them to charge people for being foreign fighters. There is a bill, an anti-terrorism bill, currently before the Indonesian parliament that's been actually languishing there. It's making very slow progress, but that bill does contain provisions that would enable police to prosecute people who are in the position of this particular family who have come back from the Middle East, clearly wanting to be involved in jihadism, and then have been resettled in Indonesia. So the police are feeling very frustrated at the moment because they want to take action and they can't.
You were in Surabaya only last week. How will this bombing change that city?
Well, Surabaya, there are plenty of jihadists in Surabaya, and previously Jemaah Islamiyah, and now pro-ISIS groups such as JAD or Jamaah Ansarud Daulah. We know that they have a presence there and very active cells, but there haven't been attacks in Surabaya. And Surabaya, it's the capital of the province of East Java, and East Java currently is undergoing a gubernatorial election campaign. And East Javanese were very proud of the fact that that has been a very peaceful and respectful campaign. And so there has been no mass protest, no violence, no intimidation, no obvious intimidation. So I think this will be a great shock to people in that city. They regard themselves as a tolerant city. There's a sizable Christian community there, many of them Chinese, and those Chinese are part of the economic elite. So this is the kind of thing that creates great fear within that community. And there'd be a lot of people in East Java who will be thinking this is an utterly repellent act, but also something that could greatly damage the standing of their city and their province.
It must be particularly unnerving because the suicide bombers included two such young girls, aged only 9 and 12.
I think this has been the really shocking thing for Indonesians. Even people of very conservative Islamic orientation who've normally been inclined to say terrorist attacks, conspiracy theories and things like that, even these people have been coming out and saying that this is a repugnant act. How could parents take their own children to certain death by having them accompany them to a suicide bombing? So particularly the story of the mother, Puji, in this occasion, to bring her two daughters who were 9 and 12, and they were close enough to her that they died immediately as a part of this attack. So there is no precedent for this, certainly in Southeast Asia, for a mother taking her daughters to their own deaths, this sort of sacrificial act. And I suspect there may not be any direct parallel in other parts of the world, but other experts might know more about that. But certainly in Indonesia, this is unheard of. And I think it will be very interesting to see what additional information comes out, whether notes were left in the house or acquaintances of this family have insight. It's very likely that the mother believed, and indeed that both parents believed, that they were ensuring eternal salvation for their children by involving them in these jihadist operations. Many jihadists have that view, that this will ensure that that they will go to heaven.
We've seen a resurgence of Christian-Muslim divisions in Indonesian politics in recent years. What do you make of the fact that this attack was directed at three Christian churches, not just a random attack on a busy street?
Well, there haven't been many major terrorist attacks on churches. There are three that come to my mind originally. There was two attacks, one in North Sumatra in May 2000, and a major one, in fact, a coordinated terrorist attack on Christmas Eve in 2000, which killed 19 people. And this is the first multiple casualty attack on a church in 18 years. So the police have been much, police and foreigners have been much more favoured targets for jihadists over the last 16 years, really going back to the Bali bombings of 2002. And so the fact that these particular suicide bombers chose churches, we'll need to see more information about that. But most jihadists in recent years in Indonesia have been much more intent on killing Indonesian government officials whom they believe to be people who have betrayed Islam. Togut is the word they use for them, and particularly the police. The police are despised by many jihadists, and there have been, I think the figure is now more than 60 police killed since 2009. So it's an increasingly bloody conflict between the police and the in jihadist community.
You're a close watcher of Indonesia. How worried are you about what you're seeing?
I think I and many other people have been saying similar things for many years, and that is that this is a very grim fact of life, not just in Indonesia, but many other countries in the world, including countries like Britain and France and Germany. And it's very important that we try to, as much as possible, maintain normal activities. We don't want people stopping going to Indonesia. We want them to be very careful. I would not stop going to Indonesia as a result of this attack, because otherwise it is a victory for the jihadists. And I think we just have to factor in that we face these risks. We face risks somewhat like this in Australia as well. We can't rule out the possibility of terrorist attacks. So I think we just need to keep this in perspective. I think we should also note that the Indonesian police have been remarkably successful at exposing, arresting, prosecuting jihadists in Indonesia, and they've kept the threat reasonably low in the last 15 years, and I'm sure they will continue to do so. There's been a whole bevy of arrests that have been taking place in the last few days and weeks, and I'm sure that will continue with even greater intensity in the coming days. So it's not for me to be giving travel advice to people, but my own view would be this would not stop me from travelling to Indonesia, and I think there are very good reasons for us to try to maintain the plans that we have and not let the terrorists deter us from doing those things, because that is what they're seeking to do.
Professor Feely, thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure, Eleanor.
And that's Indonesia specialist at the ANU, Professor Greg Feely.